Today on the Cooligans, we are talking about the U.S. men's national team. It was good. It was bad. It was a lot to figure out. Also, Thomas Tuchel, the manager at England. And
everyone's taking it just fine.
The English seem to be the most upset. We're also going to be joined by Will Koontz, the GM for the L.A. Galaxy show.
Wild. Doesn't end there, though. We got Rapido Reactions and Cardi B at a PSG game. We'll talk about also DR's on the up. That and more today on the Cooligans.
Girl Boss Nation, how are y'all doing?
Let's go. Yes, we here.
The Boss Nation, bro, is here.
My queen.
Here to stay, okay? We got to get, we'll start with this right now, real quick, because the internet.
You're Christian, I'm Alexis, by the way. Go ahead.
I'll get to that. But this, the Boss Nation reveal of the new NWSL team in Boston.
Do we have the sound?
You're just going to have to make the noise. We don't have it on the board yet. So, but it's been just wild. You know, I think when I first saw the name, I was like, should I just dunk on this immediately without seeing if the rest of the mob has dunked on them? I'm like, I'm just going to dunk on them.
Yeah, we got to get out ahead of this.
This is crazy. Yeah, There's no way that this is like what the final, name that
we didn't need consensus from the internet. You and I knew immediately. In fact, it seems like 99.9999% of the internet knew immediately this was trash.
Just feels good to be right. I
love when people is with me.
I know a lot of people worked on it. They probably hired a big old agency.
They did. And they got paid millions of us to come up with this basura.
So not great. But
how much would you and me charge?
I was like, let's have some fun here, because I got a list of all the names that they did not go with, because they might have been either a little bit worse, okay, or it could have been fine, but they ended up going with Boss Nation. So let's go.
Which we agree is a terrible name, but let's find out what they didn't go with.
Exactly. So, Alexis, you let me know what you think on each one. Girl Boss Nation.
It's better than Boss Nation.
Okay, right? But
you know that's what they wanted to say.
Next up, Lady Revolution.
Oh, God. That's actually kind of fire, because it's the women's sport and it's the revolution.
All right, so whatever. How about this? No Balls Allowed. NBA. The NBA.
Kind of what they went with.
A strange one.
That's kind of what they went with. They got a little trouble.
Hey, the Boston Wahlbergs.
Couldn't hit that.
How about this?
Sponsorship secured, though. Concession secured.
Lady Duncan. Lady Duncan.
It's kind of fire, I think. The WNBA team from Boston would be like, come on.
No Boston, no tea party.
Too long.
That's fair. The Boston Bill Burrs. Alex is not a fan of that one. If you know, you know.
Everyone got to shave their head and be angry. Shouts to everyone who's a member of our Patreon. You know.
the Beantown Broads.
Hey, you know what? You know what? For the culture in Boston, that's probably the most respectful way they say ladies. You know what I mean?
Okay. Next
no
up.
Disrespect. I'm saying broad is a good thing. It's what you hear a lot of.
The Boston Turfs.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, Chappelle signed up for the opening day.
Okay. That's spelled T-E-R-E-F-S. Okay. Damn. Not great. So you don't want them cheering, up the trans exclusionary radical feminist. That's not a great name. That's so fine. I'm glad they didn't go with that.
Chappelle and Rogan will be season ticket holders.
Next up, the last one, the Massachusetts Minute Women.
Ooh, you know what? We could all use some of that. Why y'all take so long?
Damn. So that's,
y'all got a Rubik's Cube, huh?
Those are all the names that they did not go with. Some of them could have worked, some of them maybe not. But bro, this Boss Nation reveal, they also... They also released an apology.
They should have gone with the Riveters, the Rosie the Riveters.
Okay.
Because then you could have the Revs and the Rivs.
The Revs and the Rivs.
Come on.
All and they have Riz.
Yeah. Yo. So imagine they went with like Boston Riz. It's two Z's.
Okay. I mean, look, this is the creative meeting. Hopefully, if you want to use any of our ideas, right. Feel free. But
we couldn't get in part of the ownership group because we're not out of touch boomers. So.
Boston, they got to catch it up to do a couple of those neighborhoods.
So anyway. Sorry to all the fans.
But shout out to everybody. They released an apology.
They had to.
But they were apologizing for the announcement, the campaign, not specifically the name.
No, because they tried to go with too many balls.
Too many balls. All right, bro. I mean,
they did it. They announced it at Dick's Sporting Goods. I'm not making that up.
I saw all the giggling you were doing on Morning Footy. Yeah. It was a whole thing.
My suggestion, and I couldn't say on Morning Footy, is too many balls, you're going to get in trouble. They should have went the opposite. We should have went not enough lips. It's just not enough lips. You know? I mean, talking about right. the sport. Talking.
Use that First Amendment, yeah. right.
Yeah, dude.
To talk yeah. about yeah. the sport. Okay. Anyway.
Not enough lips.
All right. We're all just, I mean, is it worse than too many balls?
I actually think it's an improvement. Oh, wait. That's the one.
I'm just saying, okay, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans.
Not enough lips.com. Someone secure that for us.
Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
A lot to go over today. We're going to be chatting about the USMNT and their game against Mexico.
Yeah.
A couple other things. We also have an incredible guest.
Crazy.
Who, I'm sure he's excited about the not enough lips movement.
Wait till he finds out.
But we're going to be joined by the GM of the Los Angeles Galaxy. Oh, very classy person on a classy show.
Yeah, this is. We're gonna get class it up after. I'm wearing a shirt and thong. So
Will Kuntz will be joining us in just a little bit to talk about everything going on with the LA Galaxy. So let's start today with the U.S. Men's National Team and their match against Mexico. We had Henry Bushnell, Yahoo Sports writer and contributor, to talk about the game against Panama. We were kind of looking forward a little bit. And I think, you know, when I was hearing the interview back, I'm like, "What? There's a little too much optimism in our voice, like in hindsight. As soon as...
It was right for the moment.
But as soon as we were... as soon as we knew that all these players were leaving... Not a great sign.
Are there people fighting garbage cans just outside our door?
I hope you don't hear it. You may not hear it in the background.
You probably don't hear it, but good God.
There are two literally like cartoonish characters fighting each other outside. Yeah, yeah. There's a puff of smoke.
You ever see that cartoon where someone gets punched and they just fall head, heel, but they stay stiff? That's kind of the sound That's coming kind of, from
a lot
just outside this wall.
Anyway. So there was a little bit of confidence or overconfidence that we had after, we knew that Ricardo Pepi, Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, a few other players were leaving and going back to their clubs because the match against Mexico looked exactly like that, where it was like, this is clearly not our best group of players. And not only did from like it wasn't even like a technical level because I saw a lot of the commentary, it wasn't like the quality of the players was so bad. It just seemed like a mentality thing or maybe a nervousness or fear. I saw Charlie Davies on Call It What You Want kind of, you know, screaming at the camera as he usually does.
The Charlie way.
That's why you hire the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just screaming about like, oh, these guys don't care. And I don't even know if I think that's too simple of an explanation of like they don't care. I think the moment was a little too big for them.
Yeah, I think this is my biggest problem with anyone talking about like previous generations because nostalgia has a lot of romanticism attached to it. It's actually a bit of a disorder. So I tend not to look back and go,
when your lady's like, hey, back when we first met, you used to do this and that. And you're like, you're mentally ill. Honey.
Yeah. I don't know. Again with this, you know? All right, I'll call them. They'll pick you up in half an hour. Bring the straitjacket.
I think it's necessary.
She's talking about last week again. Bring the padded van.
What a wild
remember dispersion. When you promised the again? We gotta, I feel bad for you, babe. Yeah, I don't have to come visit you this way.
It hurts me more than it does you, to be honest.
I'm doing this because I love you. Now, after I make this phone call, I'm going to order wings, but I don't want you to think it has anything to do with your absence.
Cardi, you okay? You going to be all right?
Carter's going to get married, so he's not 100% knowledgeable about what we're talking about. But
Carter's getting married in like 2 weeks, so there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, this isn't your fault, babe. It's the chemicals in your brain.
Why you keep talking about Boss Nation?
Take off that green pantsuit. They're coming to get you.
We gotta send you away again. Anyway,
so nostalgia, I think, is dumb because we only remember like those little moments we want to remember. Back in my day, we would have fought. Blah blah blah. The one thing I will give him credence with, or give him credit for, is this idea that like back in the day, the U.S. national team had to like fight for every point because they weren't often considered better than the team across from them or felt they had a point to prove. And there was a little bit of not having that in this match, you know. But again, what was it, 1,866 days since Mexico had beaten the U.S.
Yeah.
At some point, they're going to catch you slipping.
Sure.
They caught us slipping. I think that's actually good for the rivalry. And in a way, I actually think this is good for preparing for the World Cup. We don't have any competitive matches. So imagine we had won this game against Mexico. The next game against Mexico, we'd be like, yeah, we beat them all the time.
Sure.
Now there's like, okay, now we got to get our lick back.
I think there was a little bit of excitement of like, oh, let's see what these players can do. How can they handle this moment?
Yeah. And then we were like, how do we stop seeing what these players can do?
But then the comments from a lot of the former men's national team players.
Did we move our studio next to a Foley artist? Every sound possible. I don't think you can hear this, but
yeah, I doubt it.
Someone is just literally moving a chair as slowly as she can across the entirety of our ceiling. It's bananas.
So I was saying, the former national team players come out because there is a little bit. I wonder how much of the balance is.
It's a little back in my day.
It is a little back in my day, but I wonder what the balance is of, you know, criticizing them and criticizing the program. And also, you know, a lot of these players, they have the phone numbers for all the players that are on the team.
Yeah, why you telling the press? You can text them. Also, you're a big name, dude. They'll pick up the phone if you call.
You know? So Tim Howard, he wrote a piece. And Tim Howard is you know, we've worked with Tim.
Yeah.
Tim is a hero. You know, he's the reason I'm an Everton fan.
He's also a very thoughtful guy when it comes to the, not just national team, but like his former clubs and
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. But he's
very thoughtful in his criticism of Everton. Like, he's strict, but he doesn't say in a way that's disrespectful.
He's not.
So I take his word pretty well.
He's not bombastic.
No.
But
like,
I think.
Mr. Bombastic.
But he is, he's a contributor for The Guardian now, or I think it's The Guardian.
This dude got mad jobs, bro.
Yeah, my man got all the jobs. Say some jobs lost, Tim Howard. But you know, I think the nature of now Tim Howard being a writing op-eds,
like a thought leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wrote one about Christian Pulisic, and he's talking about
more like an ops ed, bro.
So, but he's been giving his perspective, and I think with his experience and being on the national team, playing in the Premier League and all this stuff, but he had a couple comments about Christian Pulisic, and he said, Christian Pulisic left the USMNT squad to limit his workload. Fans have every right to be frustrated at such a crucial time. Pulisic is our biggest and best player, and this was no normal USMNT camp. It marked the start of Pochettino's reign and the countdown to the 2026 World Cup. Even if he's not playing, he should still be there to create the culture and set an example. And this is the last quote. He goes, I've been a senior player and a big personality in the locker room. I demanded a lot of people, and what I found, the moment to show your gravitas tend to come off the pitch. So
half of it I disagree with. The other half I agree with.
Okay.
Like, I kind of understand the, you know, like, you've got to show some strength towards Milan and say, like, no, he has to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. And I kind of get the sentiment. Like, I don't disagree with the sentiment that's like, all right, this is Pochettino's start. If you're the leader, you should probably be here. You know what I mean? You should probably, even if it's just to oversee, just kind of have that culture of like the young players or the players that aren't starters can come to you and talk to you or can kind of get your thoughts. But also, dude, Christian Pulisic ain't the type of leader that Tim Howard was.
Sure. Yeah. I'd add to this, like, to focus solely on Pulisic is, I think, it's a little bit unfair.
No, I think it's fair because he's the captain, so to speak.
I agree, but if it was just Pulisic that left and everyone else stayed, then I think that would make more sense. But clearly, this is some sort of strategy where they were focusing on the health of these players.
I think it was more Milan saying, like, all right, it's a new coach. We can get away with it.
Well, we can speculate. I don't know. Is it Milan? Is it Juve? Is it also PSV that take it? Are they all saying the same thing?
Ernie Stewart, who's the head of PSV, didn't release Pepe for the Olympics. And now is calling him back early. This is the guy who ran U.S. soccer. That was his previous job. So
I don't imagine Pochettino is being bullied by the managers or presidents of these other clubs to get the players.
Might have been done before that.
Possibly. So basically, I understand the Tim Howard's perspective and Charlie Davies' perspective, or I understand as a player and the benefit of keeping those players there. I also understand, like, maybe they've logged a bunch of minutes. Maybe it just might be good to not have them travel to Mexico and just get, we don't want to have these players not be available for the World Cup.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Like, the rest of the players on Milan, for the most part, don't have the travel that Christian Pulisic has.
Mm-hmm.
He has to cross the Atlantic, go to Mexico. That's really rough on your body. And then to get back into playing form for the weekend, where this weekend club football's back.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense to go back. And I get it because it's a rival and it's the first game in Mexico in like forever. Apparently, we haven't played a game in Mexico in years. I could look back and try to find the date. But I get the...
Was it the qualifier that we were at? The World Cup qualifier?
I think it is. It
might have been. Nil-nil.
For me, or a friendly, we haven't played a friendly in Mexico. I think this is 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I guess for everyone else in the room, when we were talking about this in Morning Footy before the show, there was a lot of people who've been associated with U.S. soccer or soccer in America for a long time. I was the only one being like, eh. But I guess I'm just thinking of it from a more modern perspective, which is like, yo, this is the best Christian Pulisic's ever been in his career. Uh-huh. This is the most trusted he's been at any club in his career. He's in the top form. He might be the most informed player in the Serie A right now. For him to go back, I'd rather that continue, that trend continue, and, you know, miss a rivalry match against Mexico that at the end of the day is a friendly. It's a glorified preseason.
I kind of agree. I mean, I think where I'm at is I probably would have preferred that they went to Mexico and didn't play rather than going back to their clubs. I kind of agree with Tim Howard here. I don't think there's any wrong way. Like, I don't think anybody did anything egregiously wrong. It was just like, this was the approach that they went with, and we just have to live with it. And we also have to accept that we're already in the World Cup, so we have to figure out what do we want to prioritize: the health of our players, the minutes that they get, the experience. Do we want them to play in really difficult matches where they could get injured? I think that is also a little bit of a negative, because like, how are we going to have this sort of cutthroat mentality when we're already in the World Cup and we don't really? So we have to find ways to create environments and moments that will grow the players' kind of like experience and mentality to be prepared for that moment. So I think not having those great players play in this game, again, I think they should have just been on the bench watching the game and been able to support if or even play just a couple minutes. But this is I sort of agree with Tim here. It's just like, they probably just should have gone for the sake of at least like being around Pochettino more.
Optics.
Not even that's the optic. Being around Pochettino more, working with him in that environment, seeing how he handles it, seeing how he speaks to the other players. Just like, there's no way you can argue that it wouldn't have been beneficial for them to be there.
Other than the travel.
Exactly. Yeah. There are pros and cons. So I see what U.S. soccer went with.
Okay. All right. Okay. Agree to disagree.
Okay.
Right.
You know, that doesn't happen on first take. Shaking hands after.
That's so ridiculous.
So.
Preposterous.
But look, overall, just to wrap that up, they didn't play well. We were kind of in our rundown. We're like gonna talk about like what players stood out, or but there's nobody nothing to really say. Nobody stood
out. Brandon Vasquez stood out.
Brandon Vasquez, I thought
20 minutes and got 70% of the shots. The whole team.
Sargent is. I don't know what else. How many more opportunities does he need to shine?
He's getting demoted to corporal. I don't even know if that's right. I don't know if that's okay in the army.
Maybe private. We know that's beneath. I don't know army stuff. Anyway, but no, there's really nothing. Like I'm also concerned. I'm like, did Matt Turner need to start again? You know.
Did Busio and Aiden Morris need to start again? Probably not. I would have rather seen Tanner Tessman and Busio.
Sure, I'm fine with that. Look, the Sargent starting, I don't think was a necessity because we saw him against Panama. Yeah. But not just like I want these players to show up.
Bro,
and
the
shine.
Next two games are like for real.
Yeah.
We played Jamaica home and away.
Exactly.
This is for real, for real.
So, all right, let's move on to Inglaterra, to England, bro. Because we were talking about the rumors on the last episode that Tuchel or Pep, and that's it, it's over. Thomas Tuchel is the coach for the English national team.
As soon as Pep said no, they were like, Tuchel, you're in, baby.
We've always wanted you.
Yeah, too cool is what we call you over here, bro.
Okay, you're corporal now.
All right, colonel. Yeah, Sergeant got demoted. Commissioner, what happens after Sergeant?
So
at the end of the day, I think this is probably the best coach they could have picked from what's available.
I think so, too.
But England, being who they are, have taken this as if it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them as a nation.
Yes.
There's one of the headlines was a dark day for England.
Amazing. I mean, is this
what is going on with you as a nation, bro?
That's such a wild reaction.
someone okayed that. A dark day for England.
I think, I mean, if you want the Brexit folks go off, I mean, that's the headline you
the
use.
The editor-in-chief of that newspaper, it wears like an army jacket with like the pin still on it. This is a dark day for England. Damn.
A day that will live in infamy. I'm like, yo, nah, we got that.
We did one of those already.
Yeah.
Never forget this day. Like, New York got that one,
it was
actually
for a much more serious event. So this is I think that's really the story here. It's just the reaction to it. Tuchel, I think, will be a perfectly fine manager. He's had some rough stints. It's so strange because he gets tremendous opportunities.
He has 11 trophies.
He is one of the top tier coaches in world football. We all know that.
Dude, he came in half the season at Chelsea and won Champions League.
Yep.
With Christian Pulisic.
But at Bayern, there's always like...
That fell apart.
It fell apart.
That was a weird one.
There's always like, but that's kind of like what always follows him. It's just like this weirdness. There's always something uncomfortable.
Something's off.
It's like either he rubs players the wrong way or the front office or media.
Well, like, everyone's like, he's so good with the media. Yeah, for now. It always turns. Something always happens. I'm like, why is it weird now?
There's always it's the Tuchel plot twist.
Yeah.
Okay.
M. Night Shyamalan.
It happens all the time. So I don't know when it's going to happen. But you know it will at some point.
It will. And so, with the English media, look at what they've done to this man since getting hired.
Right.
He answered all the right questions. One of the questions asked of him during the press conference was, will you sing the national anthem?
Oh, they do this all the time. It's just so...
Who cares about national anthems? It's so dumb.
Are you wearing the poppy? Yeah. Wear the poppy.
Yo, imagine an Irish manager for England. My God.
So, look, the response, and you, Jamie Carragher was on Morning Footy.
Right, because he has a show called It's Called Soccer, and they talk about the Premier League,
the national
team.
Well, yeah, we're gonna get them on the show to
ask them about okay. What's the soccer in this podcast you'll be talking about? I hear a lot of football, mate.
So, but Jamie Carragher was on, and he's been making a lot of noise about how he's not happy with the appointment because he feels that the English manager should be English, and it feels. Some people would argue it's a little xenophobic to suggest that, and some people would also say like this is just a debate that we always have in football,
right?
Where it's like no foreign manager has ever won a World Cup, I like on Morning Footy he made a decent point about the I forgot the exact. He did make a decent point.
It should be the best from each of those countries? Because that's actually not a bad point.
It's
to say like the World Cup should just be a competition of the best goalkeeper, the best center backs, the best And why not the best manager from that country?
No, I remember.
In a way, I'm like, all right, I get that. But when you say it the way y'all been saying it.
That's what it is. Well, he made good points about how that the managers who have won World Cups aren't necessarily the most decorated club managers and don't even have a ton of experience.
I didn't want to put him on the spot, but he says Argentina. Argentina didn't want Scaloni to be the manager.
That's true.
He fell into it. No one else wanted to be the manager. Yeah, yeah. He was a youth manager, so they were like, all right, can you just hold on to this spot for us?
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of kept winning, so they kind of kept him on.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was never any confidence that he should be the manager until he won the World Cup.
Sure.
He almost got sacked after the loss to Saudi Arabia in the group stage. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I'm like, you're kind of right, but you're kind of wrong. De La Fuente also was a youth manager that won cups with the youth team, and they were like, all right, well, he knows the players and they're young, so you go manage. It wasn't the you're the right guy for us. It was kind of the same as Southgate. Southgate kind of fell backwards into that job.
Yeah.
No one goes out, and there's especially in England, you would not be the guy to be. There's no one in the FA that would say, like, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go out and get this guy you've never heard of. That guy would have to quit his job. He would be lambasted in the media.
Yeah. I mean, he made the point about Southgate also not having a huge amount of experience, but getting an incredible amount of success with the English national team. So I get it from that perspective. It's starting to feel a little bit not antiquated exactly.
It is. It is. And I that's the reason I asked the question I did this morning. I'm like, for everyone who's 40 and over, that's very upset about this, because, yo, if you're a millennial or Gen Z or Alpha, you're like, who gives a shit what nationality you are? I don't care about your passport. I care about these wins.
Yeah.
You know? And look, there's reasons why Germans and English in the past have not gone along.
They've had beef.
Yeah.
In the past.
To borrow a line from Norm Macdonald, Germany decided to go to war with who? The world. You know? And then after that, they did it again, you know? So I get it. I get why. But, yo, we've moved on. The real question is, shine the light on yourself, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the FA have to go get a German to manage the English national team? If you really think that an Englishman should be the manager of the England national team, why were there no good options? Why was Graham Potter not considered? Or why was he not good enough? If he's sitting back just collecting a check for doing nothing. People talk about Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe has a job, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just go tell the Saudis, like, yo, we taking your guy. And also, he didn't do well in the knockout competition. He was terrible in the group stage and in the knockout tournament set up that the Champions League was last season, mm-hmm. which is what the World Cup is.
Yeah. I'm like, how upset does everybody really need to be about this? And
it's just England, bro. They just need something to get the audience riled up.
And I think it's the frustrating thing is about the response is, like, England are good and they have been good under Southgate in these tournaments. They've gotten to, what, two finals?
They haven't won anything.
They haven't won anything, but doesn't mean that they're not good or they're not good enough to win. It's really, there's a little bit of, you know, I think if Southgate makes a couple different personnel decisions, doesn't always start Harry Kane.
But that's the big question, right? Can you advance on what Southgate's already done? I think everyone would agree Southgate hit a ceiling, right? Like, we kind of know what he's going to do. Tactically, yeah. We understand what he's doing. None of this is a secret. Can we get someone to take that next step? I think what Gareth Southgate did was elevate the English national team as a unit and as a culture, right? He got them to not be. Remember, we were having this conversation with Flex when we were in England, and he was like, no, like, I don't want my Manchester United players talking to Liverpool players when they're on the national team. And we were like,
yeah,
what? Like, bro, that's so old school thinking. But, like, that was the way the national team was back in the day. He got them all to be like one family. There's pictures of, you know, Bukayo Saka jumping into pools on a unicorn, inflatable unicorn and stuff. Like, yo, he brought out their personalities. He got them to have fun when they were with the national team. And he got them to be a little bit closer to the media, have a bit more of a personal relationship with the people that are writing about them. Where in the past, these people were just like, they would try to shoo them away from the players. And because they were writing such wild stuff about these players and the coaches and stuff. So now it's like, all right, now y'all are unit. Now y'all kind of get along. You have a better understanding. Doesn't mean you're not going to write crazy stuff. But now you know me personally. It's a little bit harder for you to be wild, too wild.
It's what Berhalter did with the
same
US.
Thing. Literally the same thing. Mm-hmm. All right, you did that. Berhalter got the kids to be men. All right, boom. Both of y'all carried us to here. Who carries us to the next one? go get yourself a tactician. That's exactly what Thomas Tuchel is.
Yeah, have you heard some of the specifics? I was reading this earlier this morning about how Tuchel does he does passing drills while also giving players math equations to figure out. So they basically can't pass the ball until they've answered like a math equation.
Cole Palmer will never pass the ball in training.
It's a little bit like he basically makes your brain work actively or more aggressively while you're in the middle of drills to, you know, I actually noticed that we were doing this again, because I didn't grow up playing. We were doing drills at TST. And some of the drills that we did were, you know, whether it's passing drills or just like one touch or keeping the ball up in the air or whatever. And basically, it would be simple. It would be like, name your favorite comedy, like a comedic movie or whatever. And but you have to before you can pass the ball, you have to say what your favorite comedy is. And it's like, as it's going, you're like, and the ball gets to you. It's like, oh crap, I gotta think. You know, it's just like this extra little step of
decision making.
Yeah,
now only thinking about the ball, thinking about what comes next. It's all smart.
Now, if I was doing calculus while the ball's in the air, I'm like, all right, slow down, Tommy Tuchs.
Yeah.
This is getting a lower.
Yo, you need to give me a TI-86 okay. in training.
Can I use ChatGPT during this drill?
Bro, I'm gonna ask Siri if that's okay with you.
So, bro, yeah, a wild, you know, kind of turn of events with everything going on with Tuchel. I wish him the best. Hopefully it goes well. But yeah, let's get to our conversation with Will Koontz, LA Galaxy general manager. I mean,
CEOs, GMs. We are the front office podcast.
Okay, this is what is this? Diary of what's that dude that does that show?
Of a Wimpy Kid?
No. Of a CEO, Diary of a CEO.
Oh yeah. We're that dude who asked the questions in that ASMR voice.
So I'm sure Will Koontz is gonna.
We're gonna make you cry, Will. It's good for the views, man.
Let's chat with Will Koontz.
I mean, I want to say it's not every day we get guests like this, but it's starting to become every day. This is amazing.
Everybody wants to do this show.
Bro, if you wear a suit on a regular, if you know how to handle a deck in front of a conference room table.
If you carry around a briefcase.
Bro, if you are reading a newspaper on a subway by folding it, I don't know what era we're talking about.
You know, wearing a fedora.
That says press on it. All right. No, but honestly, if you're an important person in the world of soccer and you haven't done the show, guess what? You're not an important person in soccer.
But that's why this man is incredibly important.
There's so many correlations here. Brooklyn native, Yankees, LAFC, now LA Galaxy. It's crazy.
Okay.
I cannot wait to talk to this man. I'm honored to have him.
Yes, the general manager for the Los Angeles Galaxy. We are joined by Will Koontz. Will, what's up, man?
Fellas, how we doing? Thanks for having me on.
We're doing well. This is exciting because, I mean, you know, we've had a couple GMs on the show. I think the last one we had was Mike Jacobs, the Nashville GM. And it was a interesting and fun convo about just the day-to-day of what it's like to be a GM in Major League Soccer with Gam and Tam. And the rule book is something like about this.
And they keep sending you PDFs to add. We got new rules now.
But this is a...
That was last week's rule book.
Yeah, we off that.
But this is also exciting for a different reason. Obviously, the Los Angeles Galaxy, one of just the premier clubs of Major League Soccer, a historic team, an important club. And now you are the GM for that team, a team where in the last couple of years, it's been a little rocky, a little bit difficult. Yes, Galaxy have had big names, but it just... You know, it just couldn't always kind of figure it out. But right now, y'all in first place in the Western Conference. So how does it feel? Mm. And what was the GM's contribution to getting the team in first
100%.
Place? We gotta, you know, pat yourself on the back right now, Will.
Now, listen, fellas, with the caveat that, like, I love me some me, I think I've got a really easy job, right? I'm trying to get guys to come play for the Los Angeles Galaxy, come out here, live in LA. Like we were talking before we started recording, you know, it's 70 degrees here and people are freezing, right? Yeah. Like this is an incredible club, an incredible city. And I'm just lucky to have the job that I have.
Be honest, when you're talking to prospective, you know, DPs, right? Potential players that you want to bring in. does it make it easier that you, one, are saying you get to live in LA, and two, that you're a Brooklyn dude talking to him, so you got a kind of a different energy. You're not showing up like, what's up, bros? You know what I mean?
Hey, listen, being from Brooklyn, in all walks of life, definitely helps, right? Because the third thing is like, listen, I don't know what you think you're going to make, but you're probably not going to make it here in MLS, right? So that's the,
Be the realistic. First two
definitely helped. A chopped cheese is like less than 10 bucks.
Listen, I'm just not trying to waste time, right? We got to keep it moving.
All right. I'm also from Brooklyn. I grew up in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. What part of Brooklyn are you from?
Okay, I grew up in Carroll Gardens.
Oh my God, I live right there.
The Carroll Gardens I grew up in, it kind of doesn't really exist. And now it's fancy. Now it's got, you know, media celebrities and everybody living there.
Again, so it took me 6 years to find cheap rent. I actually live above DeGrasse, so I'm in Cobble Hill, technically.
Yeah, yeah. I went to high school nearby.
Yeah, but my parents are in Cobble.
There as well. Amazing, awesome. Man. No, there is something, you know, the one thing I remember, you know, my first introduction to you, our first introduction to you was when you were at LAFC. And that must have been a big decision as well. I mean, I guess you didn't have to move apartments when you went from LAFC to Galaxy. But can you talk a little bit about just that decision? Or is there any... or maybe we're making too much of it. Was it even a big deal? Or are we at the point where the rivalry is at a thing where like even front office people can't?
It's like Celtic Rangers, or cool?
I mean, listen, nobody's coming to firebomb the house, right? Like, we didn't have to go into witness protection or change our name or anything like that. No, and it wasn't like I left LAFC to come join the Galaxy. My contract was up at LAFC, and you know, it's a business, and so it was the right time. I think based on the body of work, what we had done there, what I was looking to do, it was kind of a natural time to see what was out there. I actually thought I was going to end up in Austin. And I talked to my wife about it. And she was like, you know, I really don't want to live in Texas. And I was like, but babe, you know, Austin's great, good food. She was like, I don't want to live in Texas. I was like, you love country music. They got your music. She's like, I really don't want to say it a third time. So I was like, okay, that's off the table.
If the wife has to say it a third time, it's really, you're in a bad spot.
You could call me Buckaroo. There's benefits.
Cowboy boots, big buckles, right? Yeah.
You're not selling me here, honey. You know? Okay.
So then it was like, okay, you know, how are we going to pivot now? And I've known Greg Vanney for a long time. You know, my first year at the league office, one of the clubs I worked with was Toronto when Tim Bezuchenko was there, and Greg was actually the academy director. So, you know, I reached out to Greg. We kind of had a little conversation, and that led to an opportunity here.
Amazing.
How do you not panic after a season like last season? Because, bro, y'all didn't really add too much. I mean, Pencil's an incredible find, but you didn't add too much, and all of a sudden you're going from worst to first. How do you not panic as a GM? Because if I'm playing Football Manager, I'm like, delete the save. You know what I mean? This never happened. I'm starting over.
I mean, listen, if this was Football Manager, you know, you definitely escape load from the previous save, right? Trying to run it back. You know, last year was really challenging, right? And I came in late March, and I think there's video out there of me in late May, like I'm pulling Greg away from a post-game conversation, called a conversation with the supporters in Victoria Block. It was tough. You know, went through a lot with injuries. But if you look at that season, we had a really difficult start. And then about halfway through the season, things really turned around, and we started to get a little bit of a rhythm, start putting some good results together. And at the end, you know, we had injuries to Javier, injuries to Gaston. And so even though we brought in Diego Fagundes, Eddie Cirillo, Maya Yoshida, Billy Sharp, you know, we were right there the last couple of weekends on the verge of making the playoffs, but just couldn't kind of keep it rolling. But everybody who was still here and everybody who came was really excited to put that in the rearview mirror. And that was the big opportunity coming to this year. It's like, guys, it's a fresh slate. We know we have quality here. We know we have guys who are hungry, guys who want to show everybody that last year was an aberration. And then with the new pieces we brought in, you know, Josque, Gabriel Peck, you know, John McCarthy, you know, I say like, you know, Joe's from Ghana, Gabriel's from Brazil, you know, John's from Philly, which is like being in a totally different country also. You know, just being able to bring in guys from different parts of the world and add to that group that we already had. Made it really exciting. Like in January, you could tell that everything was different.
No, it's been great.
I actually voted for Gabriel Peck as my newcomer of the year, and I forgot to even mention him. In the
No, it's been great. I mean, look, when I first started going to MLS matches, I would go to like Metro Stars games. But then when Beckham came into the league, I remember being at those games and just it feeling like, all right, this is... I was always casually excited to go see a soccer game, but this felt like a significant moment. And every time the Galaxy came to the East Coast to play, I wanted to go see them. Is there any pressure to live up to those standards of not only success but just the fanfare of like the Galaxy used to fill out stadiums for away teams? Is there anything do you guys think about that when it comes to picking that finding players to join the team?
Yeah, for sure. It reminds me a lot of what we did when I was at the Yankees, right? And in a lot of ways, I think the two clubs are similar. There's a lot of tradition here, a lot of history here, and with that comes expectation. So, you know, don't come here if you think, hey, I'm just going to be chilling in Manhattan Beach and hanging out on vacation, right? You're coming here to win, to compete, to win back the city. And I think that's something that really appeals to a lot of guys. But we really do our homework, not just on the player's ability on the field, but, you know, his makeup, his character. We talk to, you know, teammates, you know, how he is in training. We talk to coaches about what he's like as a person. Try and find people who've worked with him, you know, as a young player to really understand, all right, okay, is this the kind of guy who can come here and, you know, push us over the top? Because our fans are demanding results, right? And that's a great problem to have, but we can't run last year back. So, you know, we feel really good about the work we did and the guys we brought in to help add to the group.
I mean, look, it's a little different than Yankees, right? This is MLS we're talking about. You can't just send a speedboat to Cuba you can't send a speedboat to Cuba and pick up a couple number 10s. You know what I mean? Allegedly.
Trying to stitch me up already, man.
Allegedly, right?
I mean, you know.
Gracias, yo, by the way, right? So my people, I'm Cuban, so let's go.
Not judging how you scout.
Right, everyone has their own way of getting in the league, you know? But how difficult is it finding those gems? Gabriel Peck, Pencil, probably not players that a lot of MLS fans even would have been able to point out.
Or I'll just add, like, convincing Ricky Pouge to come join the team. I mean, that's a big move as well, because we know the quality, but it's also selling that project to him too.
Right, but unearthing some of those gems, that's got to be tough, no?
Yeah, it's a combination of knowing what you're looking for, right? That's the most important thing. And I think one of the things that I was able to do when I came in was sort of say, hey, we don't need anybody that anybody's heard of before. Like if these guys, you know, I'll say like if they're sexy, right? If they come in, they help us win games, if they play hard, if they're, you know, dynamic, if they score goals, if they really compete, our fans will love them. We win games. LA is like New York. Like, what have you done for me lately, right? Like, you got to win. And so the most important thing is that we're finding guys who can come in and be at the level that we need. And that makes that a lot easier, right? We don't need to go out and find somebody who's an established star or anything like that. Then, you know, you got to do the work of, okay, what exactly are we looking for and who's got it? And making sure that, you know, we're finding guys, again, not just with the quality, but look, this league is different, right? Like you got to play through the summer, which is really, nobody else does that. You got to fly across a continent masquerading as a country. You know, I think I remember talking to Giorgio Chiellini when I was at LAFC, and he was like, California is the size of Italy, but there's three teams in California and there's, you know, 80 teams in Italy. And so the geography is tough. The schedule is tough. Everything's a little bit different, and making sure that guys can adjust to that is really important. So you go looking for guys that you think can play at the level you have and then make the adjustment to living in US, playing in MLS. And then, yeah, like we do the work and you watch the games and look, we watch Pep, we watch Payne. So these guys are fast. They're killers. Mickey Yamane, you know, had played his whole career in Japan, but, you know, Kawasaki had a lot of success when he was there. One of the best 11 in the league, I think, three times. So, you know, getting competitive guys, like I said, who are eager for the opportunity and want to help bring us back to the top.
Yeah, I mean, it must feel good, especially as a GM. I mean, we know there's the occasional you scout a player, you bring him into the team, and maybe it's a flop. It doesn't really work out. Something goes wrong. But when it works, Where's the confidence at? Where's Will Kunta's confidence? It's just like every time he gets an assist or a goal, you're like, oh, you look, you tap the person next to you. That was me.
Yo.
I made the phone call.
You wouldn't even know where to look for this dude.
No, listen, I'm damaged goods from the Yankees days, right? Like, George Steinbrenner was the owner when I was an intern, and it was like, if we don't win the World Series, nobody should have an expectation of keeping their job.
Wow. Right?
So, look, it's not the healthiest environment to grow up in, and but look, we're really happy with all the success we've had. I'm really proud of our guys, but we've got our eyes set on the big prize, right? And so now is not the time to start celebrating or feeling too good.
Okay. You were an intern.
I'm like the wet blanket around here.
You were an intern while George Steinbrenner was still there?
Oh, yeah. No, he was. Actually, I got my internship from Mr. Steinbrenner because he was a college alum of Williams College where I went to school. So I wrote him a letter during like when basketball season, all my friends were out partying. I was at home trying to get some sleep. And I was like going through an alumni directory. So I was like, yeah, what the hell? Let me write him a letter. And that turned into an internship working for him. And so when I finally got to meet him, I think it was in like June of that first year. And I walked up to him and said, hey, Mr. Steinbrenner, I'm Will Kunz. Thank you so much for your internship. And he looked at me, he's like, who? And afterwards, somebody came up to me, he's like, look, you really don't want to talk to Mr. Steinbrenner, right? Like, you really just go back to your office and then we'll tell you if you can go to the bathroom. Right?
So you're probably the only person I can ask this. How close to reality was the Seinfeld version of George Steinbrenner?
I mean, like the voice was uncanny. You know? a few less F-bombs, maybe. Larry David definitely got the voice down right.
Hilarious.
That's wild.
That's so funny. I mean, look, I have another, like, I'm Dominican, Alexis is Cuban, and we work in soccer, which makes no sense. Right. But
we're like the Will Kuntz of podcasts.
But the MLB,
let's go.
Yeah, the MLB playoffs are happening right now. I'm a Mets fan, unfortunately. Alexis is a Yankees fan.
Me too.
Okay, interesting.
Damn.
So working.
Yeah. I told you, I'm all messed up.
You just love working with rivals, man. Yes.
I love the drama, man. I love the drama.
You wow. are just. Oh my God! Thanksgiving is a madhouse, man.
Bro, but, when we were in the playoffs, like when the Yankees were playing the Tigers, my sisters would be rooting for the Tigers, and I'd be like, "Guys, this is my career."
Well, that's hilarious. That's an interesting thing, guy. Because when I was reading up on your career, and I was and I saw Yankees, I was gonna ask if like. You know, would you ever be the GM for the Mets or something, or ever work for the Mets? And clearly the answer is yes. It would have been a possibility as well, right?
That would have been too much though, right? Because it's bad enough already. You get a job like this and all of a sudden everybody you know thinks they know more than you about the job, right? And if I had to do that with my homies from Brooklyn, yes, for real, like, if I had to do that with like the Mets, but it'd be too much.
The entire city. It's similar. It's weird. Like it happens as comedians. It happens to us as well. Cause it's a lot of like, hey, you know what? You know what you should have done up there? I think, I got this joke you can use.
Or if they try to talk to us about soccer, they're like, why don't they just make the goals bigger? It's like, yeah, no one's ever thought of that, bro.
Incredible. The addition back to soccer, the addition of Marco Reus on this team, I mean, an exciting player. You know, there is the, I guess, you know, as far as the criticism of the signing, because I know some people might have been concerned with, you know, they call MLS retirement league and blah blah blah. But this man still has a lot to offer. And I just saw a recent quote. I don't have it in front of me, but that he is very happy that he ended up joining the LA Galaxy. But what was the conversations to just make that move happen for you and your involvement?
Yeah, when the conversation starts, it's really about explaining the opportunity here, right? And it's not just, hey, come to LA, retire. It's we're trying to wake the sleeping giant, right? We're trying to bring this club back to glory. We've got really good pieces and we want you to come in and not be the star, right? We don't need you to be the man, but we want you to come in and, you know, help us get to where we're trying to go. And I think for Marco, it was refreshing because, you know, he's been in Germany for his whole life. You know, he's under a microscope in Dortmund. You know, he gets to come here. Obviously, we talked about the weather is great. The club is great. The facilities are great, but he can go to the supermarket and people are like, nice hair, man. And that's kind of it, right? Like, no one knows who he is.
Sure. They're just catcalling him. They're not really, you know, right. focusing exactly. on him specifically.
Yo, what products you use? And he's like, all right.
He's like, that's great. And then we've got a team that wants to compete, right? And I think the thing for, you know, Marco is like the chance to kind of just come and be one of the guys, right? Where he hasn't been kind of ever. And yeah, he's been an awesome addition to the group. He's fit in really seamlessly. You know, he was really respectful in the conversations about mentioning, hey, I don't want to come in and be the guy. I want to talk to the guys. I want to get together for barbecues. I want to know what the group is like and make sure that I can gel with them, right? He didn't want to come in and step on anybody's toes. So he was a perfect fit, you know, first of all, off the field with his character, who he was. And then his versatility on the field, his experience. I mean, I went to England to watch him in the Champions League final, right? So it's the last game he played here before, I think it was like Colorado was that. And so, you know, he's been in all the biggest games you could possibly be in, and he brings just a different level of experience. And he's a pretty chill guy, right? I don't know if you know him. Many Germans, but like he's about as chill as a German gets.
Okay. we saw him at we went to Dortmund 2 years yeah. ago, and we saw him play against Schalke, and it was unfortunately a game that he got injured in, but you saw the sadness and despair on the fans' faces.
Yeah, they love him.
They love him so. I mean, just no. The few players are as adored by their own clubs as Marco Reus is to Dortmund. So that's why you know, like the unfortunate sort of injury history that he's had. Either with Dortmund or with the German national team. It's just like, it's always been like a little bit of like, damn, it's just like the wrong time to have this particular injury. So it's nice to just see him back and look happy.
Enjoying himself.
On the pitch
yeah.
for the Galaxy.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, the thing I told Marco was, look, man, this working out for me isn't you coming here. Right? It's great that you come here, but this working out is at the end of your time with the Galaxy. You saying, hey, this was the best thing I could have possibly done. Because he definitely didn't come for the money, right? So it was really important.
Again, the Brooklyn realism. Yeah. Just being like,
let's keep it real. We don't need Panama papers this time.
We don't have time for anything else.
Okay. The Galaxy aren't in the UEFA Champions League. I promise we're not.
We ain't getting that check.
We have a couple questions.
I do want to ask before we get to that. How often do players, especially European players, big names, how often do they reach out to you when you have to be like, nah, this isn't what you think it is. Like, I want someone who's committed.
Weekly, right?
Wow.
And this is a big club. I mean, you know, when I travel abroad, right, I'm always shocked. Right? Having been at different places in the past, like when I travel now, the response that I get from people in football internationally is just different. People know the Galaxy. There's real weight behind the name. And so, there's always a lot of interest, and people see, you know, whether it's, you know, Marco, whether it's somebody like Ibra, whether it's guys like Peck and Painsill, right? Like now we get calls from Belgium that we didn't get used to get, right? Now we're getting
what's
calls
this
from
area
Germany
code?
That we
what's
get.
All this so, about? Yeah. Like, damn,
plus five. All right, yeah. Let's do it.
Like, I called you 8 times. Great, I thought that was scam likely, bro. I'm so sorry.
I love it, man. And that's why when Ricky Pooj joined the club and everybody was asking him, like, why the Galaxy? And I loved his response. He was like, it's the LA Galaxy. Like, that... Ricky, how old is he? 24, 23? Like,
yeah.
He's never been in a world where the Galaxy weren't one of the biggest clubs in Major League
this
Soccer.
Is 48 stars above the crest. I mean, it's not that hard to understand what goes on there.
So that's dope to see. We have a couple questions from our supporters group, Gully Squad, which is our Patreon members. Okay. So we got one.
You're a Brooklyn dude. You know what Gully means.
You know what Gully means. All
right. I do. I got Jamie Alvarez right here. Like, she can't hear what I'm saying. She can't hear what you guys are saying in the headphones, so like, I have to be real careful. But she doesn't usually say that on these interviews, so she's like, yeah. Like a hug.
Nice.
Okay. You're not going to hear Gully on Men in Blazers, I promise. All right. So Kyle Ritchie asked the question, what has been the biggest reason off the field for the return of the LA Galaxy being a cup contender?
I think the attitude and the locker room, right? The competitiveness of the group. It's the right mix of guys. Everybody's hungry. the guys who were here last year are still kind of pissed off, and the new guys want to show that they belong. They're at the level. So you go into this dressing room, you know, I think back to like after that first game this season against Miami, right? We draw 1-1, and look, Busquets has to, you know, basically take a dive to get Marky Delgado thrown out, then they come back. But we're in the locker room afterwards. I remember, you know, John McCarthy just saying, guys, if we play like this, like, we'll beat a lot of teams. And you could just tell at that moment, like, something was different, right? And we're like, Cirillo, did you just go head-to-head with Messi? And he's like, yeah. I kind of blacked out, right? But, like, it was just like everything felt different from Jump Street, and it stayed that way ever since.
I love it. Yeah, it's kind of nice to start the season against the greatest players to ever play the game.
And not lose.
Yeah. You build your confidence.
Can I ask you a quick question? Not lose is important. I want to ask you a little follow-up to that, because I saw on a podcast previously you were talking about scouting, and you said that one of the most important things for you is to find players with championship mentalities. Now, what's one thing? Let's say Christian and I were just very lightly getting into being agents or third-party ownership, something along that line. What's one thing we would look for? What does that mean? How do you quantify that in the sport of soccer? What is championship mentality?
Yeah, asking for a friend, right? I think there's a few different things you can look to, right? One, you know, has the guy been a captain for his club or his country, right? There's extra responsibility that comes with being the captain. You know, does he play for his national team, right? When, like, if a guy comes here, but he's still part of his national team, you know right off the bat, he's got a reason to keep the level high. Especially because a lot of national team managers are like, look, you go to MLS and you're dead to me. So it's important that a guy like Joe Painsil, who's part of the Ghana national team, right? He was in AFCON this past winter, and now they've got qualifiers. Like, he's got to come here and keep his level sharp. You know, number of games, right? How many games this guy plays? This is a guy who plays 30, 40 games a season. Like, is he that competitive? You know, I don't want to give it all away, but I think those are three pretty good things you can look at and get a sense of how competitive guy is.
Interesting. We're getting behind the
curtain. No, I love it. I'm going to, you know, when I'm maybe in your position one day, that's why I'm going to, I have a foundation. David Meyer, he asked a question. He says, is El Tráfico at the Rose Bowl on July 4th going to be a new tradition? And just even, I kind of hope it is. It's starting to feel a little bit like the Detroit Lions Thanksgiving game or whatever.
I hope we get to go. Whichever team invites us is the shirt we'll wear.
Yeah, yeah. But
how I know a guy who might be able to hook that up.
Guy from Brooklyn knows a guy. What a shock.
I got a guy. The four guys you can say together. I got a guy. I don't know is the real answer. That's for, you know, Tom Braun, our president, and our marketing crew. Look, I just go where they tell me, right? We get the schedule. We're like, all right, bet we'll go and try to come back with 3 points. So, but it is great to have that building rocking. You know, it's become a fun little like thing for the league in the middle of the summer. It's been great. So I really enjoy it. I know our players do. So we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah. Outside, I've never been to the Rose Bowl. Me neither. I usually hear like the issue. It's like either parking. Don't you have to get there like 4 hours early or something like that? Like it's a big thing.
It's brutal. Yeah, it's just like there's one road in and one road out, and then you got to park on a golf course. So like once you show up early and be ready to hang out, like if you guys come, like yeah, just come early and it'll be fun. Stay for the fireworks afterwards. And,
done.
I love it. Yeah. Will, you are welcome here. If you're ever in New York,
please stop by.
Our studios in the city, you're welcome anytime. I mean, I didn't realize it was just going to be three New York dudes just hanging out,
chilling. Right?
I didn't realize how
that's
New
like
York.
Jamie's here, like, don't get fired.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got to walk you around your old neighborhood, bro. Esposito and Sons closed. The pork store is done, bro.
Sal's is gone.
Bro, like, it's done.
D'Amico's Coffee is still there, of course.
D'Amico's Coffee will go nowhere.
This is remarkable.
Right. But La Biciclette, which replaced Sal's, is kind of great. Their baguettes are kind of great.
All right. Okay. Do it. All right.
You guys are fancy now. Look at this.
We got a dinner date right with Will Kuhn scheduled. Yeah, let's make it happen.
Do you remember Sam's?
Yeah. My guy, Louie at Sam's, used to be. Sam's gone?
Yeah, no, still there. Well, off camera, we'll talk.
I had my 30th birthday party at Sam's. Yeah, we can get into that later.
Lou's great, man.
Amazing. No, this is, yeah, I didn't realize I was going to do this interview and make a friend. This
Familia, is... bro. We're cousins now. I hope you know that.
No, you guys help me, like, when I'm driving home out here and, like, I get to hear some New York, you know?
There
like,
you go.
Thank you, man. That means like a lot, bro. Yeah, and we were talking off air, but I just want to mention on air, like, thank you for the kind words you had mentioned about our interview with Bob Bradley when Bob Bradley was the head coach of LAFC. That was a big deal for us and a big opportunity. That was in 2020.
2021 at All-Star.
I believe MLS All-Star.
It was an honor for us to do it. That was
and that
huge.
Was the first time that MLS that they were like, hey, you don't have to be in the scrum with the rest of the journalists. We're like, we're not really journalists. We're going to make a mockery of the whole profession.
We're asking silly questions. They're professionals.
And we got to, the MLS said, like, well, we'll give you a section to the side where you can interview the players and coaches individually. And it was a huge moment. So thank you
I remember when they came to us and they said, Bob has decided he does want to do it. We were like, oh my God.
Yeah. So
I told you guys, I've never heard Bob laugh like that.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah. I was like, what is going on? I really thought you guys gave him an edible or something. I'm like, I had never heard anything like that.
It's just Will Koontz and Michael Bradley. Never heard Bob Bradley laugh like that.
unless Michael Bradley tripped. Remember they called us over to the wall? We thought we were getting in trouble after the interview. Someone called us over just to be like, hey, that was great. We've never seen him laugh like that. But we were ready. We're so used to being comedians in the world of soccer. We thought someone's going to go over and be like, cut all of that.
Will Koontz, thank you so much.
Though, so once you get him going, it's great.
Yeah, he is.
Well, thank
Dude,
you.
It's an honor to have you.
You know what? We haven't chatted with Greg Vanney. If you want to invite, he's welcome on the show.
Yeah,
as well.
He's also welcome on the show. We'll make him laugh too.
I'm happy to do that. Will, thank you so much for joining us. This is super, super cool. Obviously, decision day is this weekend, and LA Galaxy, they haven't clinched the first place just yet, but it's feeling a little bit more likely. So best of luck this weekend. And like I said, you're welcome on the show anytime, man. Really appreciate you joining us.
Appreciate you, fellas. Big fans of what you do.
Thank you, Will Koontz. What an amazing.
The best. Shout out to him.
What an honor to have these folks on our podcast.
And you know what it is? It's just, I think the cool part is that these people want to be on the podcast. It's already.
You know what?
Just another handshake.
Right, we're really crushing it.
They're like, this show is stupid, but not stupid enough for us to not be on it. Yeah, so that's like best part.
They're like, oh, wait, have we not been on a stupid show lately? We got to go on Cooligans.
Let's go mix it up with the Cooligans. So shout out to Will Koontz. Thank you again. All right, we got to get to rápido
reactions.
We got a lot of fun and wild things happening in footy. So let's have Carter kick it off. Producer Carter. To go for it.
All right. The first one for today. Lionel Messi scored a hat trick in a 6-0 win over Bolivia. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Bolivia, man, if you're not playing close to the clouds, you're not the same. You know what I mean?
I mean, Bolivia wins 1-0 against Colombia and then 6-0 away.
Their goal differential goes to zero because they were on a tear.
Messi gets a hat trick as well. So that's, I'm sure a lot of Inter Miami fans are excited about that. But this just, again, just shows the sheer level of dominance that I think Argentina are in a play. Conmebol, they're in first, deservedly so. And again, we can ask the question about Bolivia because how could they? The advantage of playing at home is just so stark and so obvious.
Yeah,
that the team, you know, but it is also
they play when they're away. They play like they're playing on a different planet.
Yeah, it's also they also like when they're at home, you see that the advantage. But then when they're away, you see like they seem slow. They seem tired. Like I think it was
Messi's air so heavy.
I think it was Messi's second goal. He did like a 1-2 with I think it might have been Alvarez or I think it was maybe Rodrigo de Paul. I don't remember. But it was like the typical Messi. He goes from the right side, passes it to somebody at the top of the box.
Glides
across the top of the box, receives the ball. And in that moment where, again, you know what he's going to do. And I understand.
I've seen these highlights for years.
And you see the defender just like, a guy who's probably like 12 years younger than him be like, Messi, don't run away from me.
Why so fast?
Next up, Carter.
All right, next up, Colombia with a 4-0 win. And John Duran scores again, seven goals now.
Off the bench.
Bro, this is it. I know he probably don't like this, but bro, this is your job forever now.
you making it more difficult.
You know, like this is like marriage advice I got from my uncle in Miami. Like if they ask you to do something, do it badly and they'll never ask you to do it again. You know what I mean? That's my advice to you, John Duran.
You need to start failing a little bit.
You wash the dishes too well, bro. And now that's who you are, bro.
But no, look, a big win. And, you know, we were talking about Colombia before. But, they're going to the World Cup. They're correcting the
should he start?
We were talking about this on One Football about should he start over Ollie Watkins at Aston Villa.
Bro, he's scoring a goal every 70 minutes. That's crazy.
It is pretty remarkable.
That's Erling Haaland level numbers.
I would say the only concern I have about John Duran, he's just he's left-footed. His right foot is kind of abysmal. He barely doesn't even really use it.
How could you say that about a man who's using his left so good?
I mean, that's it. Maybe there is some concern about, like, I don't know, either hold up play or just linking up with the rest of his teammates. In Colombia, he should be starting. I'll say that. I think he's done enough and he's in unbelievable form to be the starting striker for
Chicago
Colombia.
Fire zone, bro.
Bro, you love to see it. Look, I'm happy for John Duran. I'm happy for Colombia. But yeah, they're gonna be fine. But can they dominate CONMEBOL and Argentina? That's crushing
doubt
it as well.
That.
I doubt that. All right, next up.
All right, next up, Brazil win both of their qualifiers, move into the qualification spots for the World Cup.
Yeah, this wouldn't have been news ever in the history of football.
Brazil they're in fourth in CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying. They're clearly like underachieving, right? We sort of expect a lot from Brazil, and I believe they finished first or second in the last round of World Cup qualifying. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
They finished first.
Okay, see. So they to have this version of the team right now, where like nobody exactly knows like what the identity.
It's a
little scattered. It's just like, you know, every individual player is an absolute is brilliant on the ball. And you know that how impressive they all are, like at their clubs.
They're just not Jogo Bonito-ing. Yeah, you know what I mean, we need y'all to Jogo Bonito.
They need to find that unity as a team. I don't know if you saw just today, Neymar is now back training with his team.
That's gonna be huge for this team. He's a leader.
So maybe having Neymar back in the fold might be something that will help unify this team, because as much as people criticize Neymar about what his lifestyle or whatever, there's something. He's not the Messi to Brazil.
No, but the team rallies around him.
The team rallies around him. So that'd be great to see. So, some of the other players that are, I think, doing great. Rafinha.
Killing it
at Barca. And even Rafinha becoming like a more of a leader than
crazy. I didn't think he had it.
That we saw in the past. All right, next up.
All right, Cardi B went to a PSG game and wanted to sit with the ultras. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we got
to. Let's play the clip, because this is why you invite someone like Cardi B to a game.
So she, Cardi B just has the caption, "Why they sat me in the boring side." So here goes.
I want to be over there. This side is mad quiet. Like, I don't want to sit with the bougie people. I want to sit with the rats.
With the rats.
Sit me with the rats.
Sit me with the rats is, my new slogan. I love this. And this is, what's funny is that we were at a PSG game.
We went to Messi's debut.
We went to Messi's debut at Parc des Princes. And we probably had the same exact experience. We were around the bougiest of
we
people.
We couldn't get tickets in that section.
No, there's no way. Yeah. So while we're there, we were sitting next to, what was it, the guy that didn't know?
So this was his whole thing. He's American. He goes, why were they let in? So Lyon scores. Paquetá, I think, scored.
Yeah.
And he goes, why were they let in so many Lyon fans? I said, where are they? And he goes, right there. Look at that. They're all cheering. I go, They're PSG fans. He goes, no, they're rooting when they were cheering when the goal got scored. I go, they've been singing this whole match. They're going to sing for 90 minutes. He goes, really? I said, yeah, that's how soccer is. These are ultras. He goes, oh, well, football games are like NFL games aren't like this. He just didn't understand. He thought all those people cheering were Lyon fans because they rooted after the goal got scored. I'm like, no, they're cheering harder for their team to now equalize.
Exactly.
Could not get it.
So shout out to Cardi B. You love seeing Dominicans.
Sitting with the Ratch, bro.
Sitting with the Ratch. Imagine PSG holding a flare at a PSG game.
The Ratch Ultras, bro.
Okay. I call it Cardi PSG. Let's go. What's next?
All right, our last one for today. The Dominican Republic, Christians, Dominican Republic, are one win away from their first ever Gold Cup berth. Let's start with you, Christian.
Vamos.
Bro, this would be unprecedented.
Dude, the Dominican Republic are playing.
This would be unprecedented.
The DR are playing in the Nations League. These games are also fascinating. They just played two games, one against Antigua and Barbuda home and away. They won both games 5-0. They play.
That's crazy. That's baseball numbers.
You see the stadiums, and I don't know if people are there. The people might be behind the camera. Like I literally don't know if people are going to these games. So whether it was in I think they. DR, the one against Antigua and Barbuda, I didn't see one. There were no seats. There were no bleachers.
I did see. So I saw clips of this. And yeah, I was like, they did this at a high school?
Is it a closed door friendly? Yeah. You know what I mean? But no, Dominican Republic have been fantastic. They've won all four of their matches in Nations League B. The winner of the group, of each of the Nations League group, gets an automatic berth into the Gold Cup. So I think just one more win and they clinch that.
This is huge.
But this is not only, and we've, you know, Junior Firpo of Leeds got two goals in this game, and I think he got one in the previous one. But the ambition. It's not just qualifying for their first ever Gold Cup. It is qualifying for the World Cup. And they're talking about it. And they have big, big plans. And you see the desire. You know, obviously, having Junior Firpo there is remarkable because you can see the quality immediately.
Very different than everyone else. But you know, like in the World Cup, you got all those roaming like groups of fans. Like it seems like all of Saudi Arabia's over here. All of Qatari's over here. All of Canada's over here. Imagine a Dominican contingent.
That's bro. What So shout out to Dominican Republic.
I saw the que lo que is out there, bro.
You love to see it. It was so cool. So yeah,
Caribbean football, baby.
Gold cup at DR Rebel Arena. Let's do it, bro. God. So thank you again.
The Tigres that are gonna show up for that, bro.
Okay. It's just it's gonna be you bring your wife and your side piece.
Yeah,
everybody
get along. Everybody get along.
We have to squash the beef.
That's right. And we're gonna crown the winner of the match in the stands, and that's whoever has the most slashes and zippers on their jeans, bro.
Okay. Look, that's our culture.
Okay. Respect their culture.
So thank you again.
Extra points if you bought those jeans at a barbershop.
Shout out to Will Koontz, the LA Galaxy GM, for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another fun episode of The Cooligans. We'll be back on Monday. We have an incredible guest on Monday. Speaking of the business of the game, we're going to be joined by CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt, Axel Hellman, to be told. Alexis is
nothing but money.
But money out here, okay?
There's money team out here, fam.
Okay, they're going to be stacks of money on the desk during this interview.
Bro, we talk about adding more games to the calendar. Yeah, you're trying to make revenue.
Okay.
You feel me?
So, yeah, we're bad people. Bro,
okay. Calendar congestion. I don't know what you're talking about. I got count money on every day. Exactly. You feel me?
Right? I'm tired of these tattoo millionaires.
Yeah,
right?
Nah, bro.
We'll be here on Monday. So we'll be obviously club football is back this weekend as well. So we have a lot to discuss. Thank you again for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe.
Please subscribe.
Hit the subscribe button here on YouTube or where you're listening to the podcast. We appreciate y'all. We'll see y'all Monday. Have a good weekend. Peace, everybody.
Love you guys.